Excellent. So it's my great pleasure to introduce Professor Victoria Harrison, who is a professor at Macau, and whose journey to get here included not only a 12-hour flight, but a boat trip. Victoria's research is in analytic philosophy of religion, especially issues generated by religious diversity, and also Indian and Chinese philosophy. Her work's already been mentioned here several times, and most recently includes Oneness, a Big History Perspective, in the book The Oneness Hypothesis, Beyond the Boundary of the Self, which she co-edited, and which came out just last week. So, Victoria, thank you very much for coming to me.
Well, I'm really glad to be here. I've been excited about coming to this conference for a long time, and I've written a new paper, so this is the first time this one has been delivered. It's a little bit rough at the edges, as you will see. It's a work in progress, so I'm looking forward to your comments, which I'm sure I will benefit from. The other thing I should warn you about is that I do have some slides. I also have a written version of the paper. So the great intellectual challenge for me is going to be to try to make sure these are coordinated in my somewhat diminished jet lag state. So if it starts to get out of sync, you know, just somebody wave a hand. So the promises and perils of global philosophy of religions. And the key word there for me, I think, is global. What I want to do is explore this idea of global philosophy of religions. I think it's still a fashionable word, especially in Western academia. You get global theology, global philosophy. I don't think you get yet global metaphysics, which is a pity. But the word global is widely used, and it's put in front of many other words characterizing disciplines, perhaps to the extent that it's now starting to rise suspicions. So when you say global ethics, for example, global philosophy of religion, the question arises, well, what does it mean? What does it mean for a discipline to be global? Is it just a handy way to acquire research funding? I myself have a nice grant from the University of Macau for a project on global philosophy of religions, and I'm sure I wouldn't have got it if it was just on philosophy of religion. So is there any more to this idea of a global philosophy of religions than just a fashionable word? So here's one challenge, and it comes from a recent paper by Yujin Nagasawa. He's writing on global philosophy of religion and its challenges. And in his conclusion, he makes this remark. Globalizing the philosophy of religion initially sounds like a good idea to most people, but it is not easy to explain exactly what is good about it for the progress of the discipline. Most people assume that globalizing philosophy of religion is a good thing. But Nagasawa is asking us to specify what's good about it. What's good about global philosophy of religion? What does it have to offer the discipline? So we've got two questions. Firstly, what is global philosophy of religions? Secondly, what does globalizing have to offer the discipline of philosophy of religion? Here is a very brief plan of the talk. I want to address the first question first. What is global philosophy of religions? I'll be giving a brief account of what I think it isn't, and then what I think it is or could be. I'll then say something about what's new about the approach to global philosophy of religions, which I'm advocating. I'll talk about this idea of non-local method and non-local content. What that means will become clearer very soon, I think. And then I will draw some general conclusions. So here's the first part. What is global philosophy of religions? There's probably a fairly general consensus that whatever global philosophy of religions is, it's not what is standardly practiced within the discipline. So just as a way of setup, consider this brief characterization of the current state of philosophy of religion, which again comes from Nagasawa's paper. Scholars work within their own traditions and rarely interact with those in other traditions. Virtually the only time they interact with others is when they defend their views from critics. For example, Christian philosophers focus on the traditional Christian concept of God, according to which God is an omniscient, omnipotent, and all-loving creator of the universe. Drawing upon this conception, they discuss issues such as the nature and existence of God, the justification of religious beliefs, the problem of evil, the afterlife miracles, and religious language. They rarely express strong interest in other traditions, such as Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam, Jainism, Shinto, and Sikhism, even though they occasionally interact with Judaism. So this is a characterization of philosophy of religion as it's usually practiced today by one of its leading practitioners. Now, I was rather surprised myself to read this, I must admit. And I don't want to defend the accuracy of this portrayal. I think perhaps it's specific to a certain type of philosophy of religion in any case. I quote it here because I think it does a lot to explain to us why people are finding the idea of global philosophy of religions attractive. It's to get away from a discipline which we can characterize in this sort of way. So, to identify the form of global philosophy of religions that I want to focus on, I first need to unpack a distinction between local philosophy of religions or religion and global philosophy of religion. After all, if we're talking about global philosophy of religion, it might be helpful to understand the content of that by looking at what its opposites might be. So, I want to talk about local philosophy of religions. And what I want to do in the next part of the paper is make a distinction between three ways of doing philosophy of religion, all of which I would describe as local, but local in different ways. This will be very schematic. I'm setting out the logical spaces that we have here. After briefly describing these three ways of doing local philosophy of religions, I will then move on to what I think is a fourth way, which I would characterize as genuinely global philosophy of religions. So, sorry, the top line is missing. I hope this won't be too confusing in the end. These are the three forms of what I want to call local philosophy of religions. So, what's required to generate these distinctions is a basic understanding of what the contents of philosophy of religion might be, what's the content of the subject. And distinct from that, what I'm calling here method or orientation. The word method, I'm not happy with here. We kind of understand what method in philosophy of religion is, but the term isn't quite right for what I want, so I'm trying orientation. There is a better way of saying this. Maybe you can help me find it later in the discussion. But we seem to have a fairly clear distinction between the two things, method orientation and content. So that's going to give us these three forms of philosophy of religion here. First form, the method stroke orientation is local, and the content is local. So here you're going to get very traditional forms of philosophy of religion, in which typically it will be difficult to distinguish what's philosophy and what's religion. You might say the parameters in which the thinking is done are very tradition-bound. Form two, we have, again, local method or orientation, but this time combined with a content which is non-local. A philosopher working with non-local content is thinking about material which comes from possibly a range of traditions, traditions which they themselves are maybe not so at home in. So that's another possibility. The third one is where the method or orientation is non-local and the content is local. So in this case, you have a philosophical method, a philosophical style, which is not tradition-bound, combined with a content that is bound to a tradition. It seems to me that these are three distinct possibilities, and much more could be said about each of them, of course. But it also seems that none of these is fully global philosophy of religion. There's always a local component to philosophy pursued in either of these three ways. Probably most philosophical work carried out in philosophy of religion today takes form three. So the method or orientation would be non-local. So it's not coming from any particular tradition, but yet the content is local. It's focused on usually Christian subject matter, sometimes material from Judaism or Islam, but local material with a general philosophical method. Now, what I'm interested in this paper is a type of philosophy of religion which doesn't fit into any of these frameworks. So the question is, well, what's the other logical space? And I think the answer, when you set things out this way, is pretty obvious. It's having a method or orientation which is non-local, combined with a content that is non-local. Putting these together, I think what you get is something that I would be happy to call a global philosophy of religions. Now, I'm sorry that so far this is presented at such an abstract level, but I think for me it's helpful to become clear about what exactly we are talking about and aiming for if the goal is a global philosophy of religion. Now, I should also say that philosophy of religion that's performed using the other methods has its values. So in defending a global philosophy of religion, as I will in a moment, I don't want to give the impression that I'm undervaluing the other ways of doing philosophy of religion. I think they have a place and they can yield interesting results. But if we want to do global philosophy of religion, we have to do something slightly different. So, in very general terms, what I want to say is that global philosophy of religions is an intellectual exercise that transcends the methods of any local philosophical tradition, as well as the contents provided by any specific religious tradition. It's philosophy practiced in this broad compass that I want to call global. And I want to again make another qualification. I think Mick made this qualification too. In talking about global philosophy of religion and non-local content, there is no implication that a philosopher is expected to cover all traditions. I think that would be unrealistic. So in global philosophy of religions, as I'm understanding it, both the method or orientation and the content of philosophical inquiry are non-local. And the focus of this form of philosophical work is on the questions that the work addresses. And these questions may or probably will have arisen in the context of philosophical or religious reflection on, in one or several religious traditions. But in seeking to answer them, the philosopher is practicing global philosophy. Sorry, the philosopher who is practicing global philosophy can use relevant insights and arguments and ideas from any religious or philosophical context as resources for philosophical engagement. So the key thing is, the philosopher is driven by questions, and it's going to be the questions themselves, the philosophical or the religious questions, that determine is too strong, but let's say influence the philosophical method or orientation that is used. And it's going to be the questions themselves that indicate which traditions the philosopher should look in for material. So all of the religious and philosophical traditions of the world are regarded as potential resources for a philosophy of religion which is non-local in method, the way I'm understanding it, and also non-local in content. Now, again, apologies that this is very abstract, but I thought it might help if I illustrated the idea with a real-life story. And this is from my experience of moving into my new office at the University of Macau. I had the wonderful moments when my boxes of books arrived and it was time to put them on my new bookshelves. So I got to work, worked for hours sorting the books, organizing the shelves, organized everything according to whether it was Chinese philosophy or Indian philosophy, of course split into Buddhist philosophy and Hindu philosophy. I then got to work on the Western philosophy, neatly categorized it into the various sub-disciplines. I sat down when I was finished and got ready to enjoy my work. And I was absolutely horrified, aghast, when I saw what I had done. I had reproduced the standard Western way of thinking about the relationship of these philosophical traditions. So I started again. I got all of the books off the shelf, and instead of organizing them according to which philosophical tradition they came from, I organized them according to the philosophical questions they were dealing with. So I have an ethics shelf where I have Indian and Chinese and Western books all together. I have a wonderful metaphysics part of the bookshelf with Indian, Chinese, and Western material, and so on. And the experience of doing this was incredibly interesting and very intellectually liberating. And it's the change of thinking that the change in the location of one's books, for me, represented, that I wanted to capture in this characterization of global philosophy of religions. What would a philosophy of religion look like if the boundaries between Indian, Chinese, and Western thought were not the first thing that we noticed? Now, again, another qualification needs to be made. I'm talking about Indian thought, Chinese thought, Western thought, because these are the ones, the traditions with which I'm familiar. It's not supposed to be exclusive. Okay, so that's the story, and I hope it helps to give you a more concrete impression of what I'm trying to convey in this paper. I'm trying to capture a sense of what it would actually be like to think as a global philosopher of religion, to not have these boundaries between traditions be the thing that shapes your approach to problems. So it's not that you forget where any particular range of ideas comes from, or just fail to notice that some author is writing from a particular tradition. It's just that this is not what you notice first. It's a part of your body of knowledge, but it's not at the foreground. Now, even at this early stage, fairly early stage of the argument, I'm aware that I've already introduced many ideas which would be controversial and would require considerable explanation and even defense. Some people, of course, would object to the very idea that a philosophical method or orientation could be free of any tradition. And others might raise questions about what we can actually learn about religion from the kind of method I'm suggesting. The first objection has already generated a huge literature, so I just want to leave that one aside for now and say something about the second issue. As you all know, I'm sure, the philosophy of religion has attracted criticism over the last several decades, probably, on the grounds that it's overwhelmingly focused on religious ideas, and it's disengaged from religious life and practice. The complaint is that this is problematic because it renders the work of philosophers of religion uninformative about religion in its lived dimensions. And I actually agree that this is a problem and it needs to be dealt with. And I think it actually has been dealt with very adeptly by many people in this room. So it's time that we allowed other approaches to come into play, I think. Approaches which emphasize again the role of religious ideas, not with the pretension that this is going to tell us a lot about religion as it's actually lived and practiced, but just to give us space to investigate religious ideas in their own right. So it seems that global philosophy of religions as a focus on religious ideas that's non-local in orientation and in content can play a role amongst these diverse approaches which now characterize our discipline. Yes, so let me just sum that up and agree with what many of you have said already. Pluralistic methodologies within the philosophy of religion, I think, is something that we can embrace. And the kind of global philosophy of religions which I'm trying to characterize here is going to be one voice among that. So the goal is to re-emphasize the investigation of religious ideas, but this time with non-local content and coming from a perspective that's not that of any single tradition. So the priority, as I said a little earlier, is on philosophical problems. And especially as we're talking about philosophy of religion, those philosophical problems that emerge from religions. The goal is not directly to get information about religions or shed light on religions as lived and practiced, but rather to work on certain philosophical problems that can be meaningfully addressed from using the resource base of multiple traditions. So I'm suggesting a very flexible approach to philosophy of religion. And I think it's important to say that actually, I'm wondering whether it is. I think this perhaps is a lacuna in the paper. So let me just quickly move on. What I think I have done so far is given some content to the idea of global philosophy of religion by describing three things which it isn't and one thing which it is or could be. I've addressed very briefly an initial objection to this, and I've tried to contextualize the practice of global philosophy of religions within our methodologically pluralist discipline. So this brings me to the next part. What is new about global philosophy of religions? Now, in the not too distant past, philosophy of religion had a very predictable curriculum. Here is an image of it. It neatly sums up pretty much exactly what you would expect in a philosophy of religion course anywhere in the Western world. Most of you are nodding in agreement. You know this. So, slowly, in the history of our discipline, material from other traditions was gradually introduced into this curriculum. And the way it was done was very often through focusing on the topic religious diversity. Religious diversity was conceived, somewhat oddly, I think, in retrospect, as a discrete topic within the discipline, rather than as a reality which could frame it. As an isolated topic, perhaps a lecture or two were devoted to it. And the problem was seen largely in terms of giving a comparison between one tradition and another, and inviting perhaps assessments of where the better arguments lay. Now, as Eugen Nagasawa remarked in his paper on global philosophy of religions, while that provided a fascinating intellectual exercise. It didn't actually help advance any of the real philosophical debates within philosophy of religion. So, if you think back to that rather depressing description of our discipline, which I put before you earlier, it seems that the situation in most philosophy of religion classes today is probably still pretty much like this, but with some religious diversity thrown in as a topic. Or is it? Is it like this, or has it become more like this? Just give you a moment to digest. Up here, the key change is that the primary node that generates all of the material is not God, the concept of God, but rather the concept of religion. So you're probably all familiar with this conceptual shift. You're also probably already familiar with the range of major topics that can be generated by that conceptual shift. Arguments about traditional Abrahamic theism are still there, but they're one part of this newly defined subject area. Arguments about non-theistic conceptions are also a major part of this newly defined subject area. We have Buddhist conceptions of ultimate reality, Confucian conceptions, Taoist conceptions, and so on. We also have a whole section of the discipline focused on non-Abrahamic theism. Now, this is all very positive, but is this global philosophy of religions? Is this adequate to be called global philosophy of religions? I want to suggest that it isn't. And the reason that it isn't is that it's still giving primary conceptual priority to the division between the traditions. So Buddhist philosophy is in its separate piece of the discipline. Hindu philosophical conceptions are neatly separated from it. The questions that will arise when considering Abrahamic forms of theism are neatly demarcated from any questions that could arise when considering the Buddhist material. So this, I think, is what many people, and I think also Yujin Nakasawa would say this, would regard as a global or globalized philosophy of religion. But this is not the form of global philosophy of religion which I want to put to you today. I think we can go further. This is only a first step towards globalization. The next step may be reached by focusing on philosophical questions, the philosophical questions that arise from religions, and by doing so, going beyond the typical questions that arise within the framework of any area represented on this diagram. Now, to see the sort of conceptual shift that would be required, consider someone is teaching a philosophy of religion course and they have a section on the problem of evil. They want to globalize, so they think, well, let's include some Chinese material. So they might have their range of questions that come out of primarily Western or solely Western reflection on the problem of evil. They take these questions to the Chinese material and ask how they are answered. Now, that's, okay, another step on the way. But the problem is the Chinese material is not being allowed to generate its own questions. So the point of having a non-local philosophical method or orientation is to allow the questions to arise freely. They're not tradition bound, and nor, as I said, is the content. You have your questions, and you look and see which philosophical tradition, which religious tradition, which parts of these complex traditions might have something useful to contribute to an answer to these questions. So global philosophy of religions, as I'm conceiving it, like many of the other new methodological approaches within the discipline, is to a certain extent detached from the constraints imposed by the typical topics and range of questions that formed until recently the standard content of the subject. Another diagram. Yeah. So this was my bookshelf before my awakening. And I think this is the model that many people still have when they approach this idea of globalizing philosophy of religions. So, in this paper, I'm partly dialoguing with Eugene Nagasawa, and this is another quotation from his work. So I think our views are interestingly close, but also interestingly and significantly different. So, in order to globalize the philosophy of religion productively, he writes, we should recognize that the main focus of the field need not be on tensions between religious traditions, and that more attention can be paid to common problems which philosophers of religion in distinct traditions can address together. Now, with this statement, I think we agree. Where Nagasawa and I would disagree, however, is on the question of the philosophical method or orientation. It seems clear, he said, I think it's clear reading his paper on global philosophy of religions, that his image is the philosopher is coming at the subject from a Christian orientation or a Jewish orientation, a Buddhist orientation, but the method or orientation is still very much tied to some tradition. So the way that I made the distinctions earlier in the paper, by my categories, Nagasawa's form of global philosophy of religion is actually a form of local philosophy of religion that looks deceptively global because of its content. And it's that I want to try to move away from. Okay, I want to skip that one in the interests of time. Yeah, so in my view, rather than thinking of a philosopher as somehow obliged to work from the perspective of one tradition or another, or to adopt the methodology or perspective of some tradition or another in order to address a philosophical problem, I think that a philosopher can tackle intellectual issues simply as an intelligent human being. They can regard relevant work within any philosophical or religious tradition as a potential resource to shed light on the philosophical issues that interest them. So to tackle these issues as a Christian philosopher, a Buddhist philosopher, a Hindu philosopher, is not to be fully engaged in the form of global philosophy of religions that I'm trying to characterize here. It's to tackle non-local questions in a local way. So the results of that kind of philosophical activity will typically be very different from the results that you would get on a fully globalized philosophy of religion. Now, there is a reason, of course, why Yujin Nagasawa wants to preserve the distinctions between the traditions in his characterization of global philosophy of religion. And I think it's a good reason. The worry is that if the philosopher is allowed to range freely through these traditions, then the integrity of the traditions will somehow be undermined. They will lose their autonomy. So the idea is some ideas can only legitimately be discussed from within the context that generated them. Now, there's so much to say about that, but let me just, for the interests of time, say I think it's demonstrably false. A look in the history of philosophy gives us so many instances where this is shown not to be true. The infusion of Chinese philosophy with Indian Buddhism, for example, shows the potential of creative philosophical thinking that's going beyond these clear boundaries between traditions. Okay. Yeah, so here is a final image for you. And it's not quite right because it's still portraying the traditions as discrete bundles, but it is a significant improvement on the last image you saw, because the arrows indicate a permeability between the boundaries of the traditions. So we are not forgetting where these boundaries are, but we are allowing our thoughts to move between the boundaries consciously. And this can allow a philosopher, a global philosopher of religion, I suggest, to engage much more effectively with very broad philosophical problems, the kinds of broad problems that interest people inside and outside of the academy, real-world problems, as I characterize it up there, but also philosophical problems. So, just finally, to return to that challenge that I took from Yujin Nagasawa at the beginning of the paper, that question, what can globalizing add to philosophy of religion? What can the discipline gain? And the very brief answer is, it can gain an enormous amount of potential to deal with some very important questions that it just cannot do from within its tradition-bound form of practice. So the global philosopher of religion has an enormous amount of resources, intellectual resources, with which to work, but also a much wider range of problems to investigate. And this seems like a huge gain to me. And again, I'm not suggesting that every philosopher of religion needs to be conversant with these traditions and all of the other traditions that could have been on this diagram. But what I am suggesting, or what I want to end by suggesting, is that we can perhaps think of global philosophy of religions as a jigsaw puzzle. Participating philosophers provide their own pieces to the bigger puzzle according to their expertise, but the result is a collaborative effort. And as this effort gathers force and the project of global philosophy of religion really takes off, then these boundaries between the traditions will increasingly become more porous. There will be specialists, of course, working in each. It's very important. But it will be normal for people to be able to participate in philosophical debates using material from at least two, maybe three traditions. So that's my vision of what a global philosophy of religions is or could be. And I apologize for the chaotic nature of the presentation, but I hope that at least the outline of the vision was clear, and I look forward to your comments and questions.